Welcome back to the Ed Morrissey Show podcast. Joining us, as always, the Prince of Twitter, the Regent of RedState.com, Andrew Malcolm, at AH Malcolm, here to do our weekly check-in and all the things that are going on in media and the world. And my goodness, nothing's happening, so.
No, everything's quiet. No.
Everything's quiet. Nothing happened. I got to say, we're probably going to talk a little bit about some of the same things we talked about last week, which is the media coverage of the war. That's actually, you know, the topic of your column, which is that Trump is unpredictable, media says, but determined would be more accurate. You know, Donald Trump has been around for a long time. He's, you know, in politics, he's been around for 11 years. But he's actually been in the media for almost 50 years.
Yeah, he loves it. Yeah.
Well, the reason why I'm bringing this up is, I don't know if you saw this, because you're the Prince of Twitter, I assume that you keep track of this stuff. But there's some new, well, not new, there's some very old video of Donald Trump talking about Iran that's floating around, you know, today. Yeah. One is a clip from 1987 where he's talking to Barbara Walters about it and saying, you know, if Iran starts being a problem, we should stop getting pushed around. We should go just grab their oil. And she's like, well, how would you do that? How would you do that? And he says, you go after their oil. You know, she says, well, would you start a war with them? And he says, yeah, if they're messing with us, we're going to, you know, he says, you start a war by being weak. You don't start a war by being strong.
Yeah. Yep.
He's been talking about this for, and there's another clip from 1980 during the hostage crisis, which was similar, right?
Right. And 2011.
Yep. Said, I saw the one in 2011. Yep.
Yeah. He said Iran can never be allowed to go nuclear. So that 2011, that was before Obama had a birth certificate.
You know, I mean, again, we should be looking at the consistency of Donald Trump. Not, I mean, yes, he likes to shoot from the lip, right? And he's always done that. That's just, I will say this. When he first started being a public person, and this is around the 1980 thing, he was doing his best William F. Buckley impression. He really was. I mean, do you ever see some of these old clips from 1979, 1980, 1981, where he's kind of really breaking into the media space? You know, he's making tons of money.
Practicing. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, you know, he's finding his rhythm, but he's kind of like a William F. Buckley sort of thing, right? You know, he's got the sort of upper crustish way of talking. And sometime in the mid 1980s, Donald Trump really got into wrestling, I think, and decided this is more me.
Yeah.
And by the time you get to that 1987 clip with Barbara Walters, I mean, I was looking at these two Trump clips today, and that 1980 clip is still him sort of in his William F. Buckley stage, right? William F. Buckley, famously urbane, you know, tremendously intellectual kind of guy. And I think that that's kind of what he initially wanted to project. But by the time he's on with Barbara Walters in 1987, he's like, hey, you know, I'll just kick their ass. And what do you mean? You know, well, he's an outer-borough New Yorker. I think is his nature.
No, he had nothing to lose then. He was making himself famous before social media. And it worked. No, I mean, he has a way, and he gets attention whenever he wants it. One interesting thing to me is that in the first term, it was too often spur of the moment. He'd think of something in the afternoon that he wanted to say, so he'd create a media opportunity. And he'd say something, and everything he says is news. The media knows this because they get lots of clicks whenever it's about Donald.
Right.
And of course, he knows it. So they love him for the, they hate him, but they love him for the business that he draws. And so he would go out and say something outrageous or respond to something that somebody else said. And it just completely blow up his team's weekly message. You know, these guys, these teams set out each week, they got to, oh, we're going to talk about lowering gas prices this week or whatever. And he would go out and he'd say something critical about Mitch McConnell. And that would be the big news. And for 2 or 3 days, and nobody would pay attention to the gas thing. This time, this term, he is more disciplined. And you can see if there are, like on C-SPAN or something, you can see when there's prolonged, not these 8-second sound bites from the networks, but when there's prolonged opportunities to see him interacting with the media, he doesn't take the bait anymore. I credit, well, his maturity, political maturity, but also his chief of staff, Susie Wiles.
Who's really sort of the Trump whisperer, as it turns out. Yeah.
That's right. And she did that all during the campaign. When I first noticed how more disciplined he was, and they'll say that, well, you know, Mitch McConnell says something, something, something. And he'll say, we're not talking about Mitch McConnell today. And so he's more focused, and it's smarter. It's just plain smarter. Now, he still goes off the handle sometimes, but that's what makes him bait for the media. And he plays them. It's fascinating to watch. We will not see the political likes of Donald Trump again in our lifetime. It's like one of those comets, you know, that comes every once in a while and you watch it and oh wow. But it doesn't come around again. And so I'm enjoying every moment. Sometimes I wish he would do something. Sometimes I wish he wouldn't do something. But policy-wise, you know, he's hitting the nail on the head as far as I'm concerned.
Well, I think so, too. And look, I have issues with Donald Trump's style. The difference, but that's a matter of taste, right? And I try to explain this to people. It's like, you know, I've never really much liked Donald Trump's style. What I do like are the policies that he puts in place, right? And the policy goals that he sets in place. And to me, outcomes matter a lot more than anything else. And he is, you know, he's pugnacious. He likes a good fight. He is, though, looking at how to get results in the most direct way, right? We had this fight. And it's not settled yet. I don't know if it's going to get settled over funding for DHS, right? And he wants to get funding in place for DHS because of TSA, because of FEMA, because of the Coast Guard, right? Already have funding for ICE, and I think for Border Patrol too. It's a separate fund that was passed in the last reconciliation bill. Well, Democrats want to make this a big issue because they want to force Donald Trump into accepting a bunch of reforms for immigration that would basically kneecap immigration enforcement, especially the idea that you're going to require judicial warrants for the first time ever to detain illegal aliens. Never had that before. And so Senate Republicans came up with this idea, and I know people are going to disagree with me on this, and it's fine. Senate Republicans came up with the idea that we'll just fund everything else and not fund DHS or not fund ICE because we've already got funding for ICE. They're already funded. And we'll come back and do the budget funding in the reconciliation package, right? Which isn't subject to a filibuster. And Donald Trump said, okay, that's fine. And I'm thinking Friday or Saturday. I was like, oh, Donald Trump scored another victory. Chuck Schumer came up empty on another shutdown because Senate Democrats just let this thing go on unanimous consent. They wouldn't even vote on this. Senate Democrats just said, okay, we're just going to let it go on unanimous consent. And I said, they're not going to get anything now. They won't get anything. The only thing that could possibly go wrong would be House Republicans snatching defeat from the jaws of victory. And by God, Andrew, at least in my opinion, it's exactly what they did. And people are saying, John Thune, this, John Thune, that. Donald Trump actually supported this. It was made known by the White House that Donald Trump supported that idea because it was practical. He short-circuited the Democrats' attempts to impose reforms on things. The funding was flowing. You could do the rest of the funding in reconciliation. And what Senate Republicans did said, we'll pass the big parts of the Save America Act in the reconciliation package. We'll come back and do it as reconciliation. Well, now we're still shut down because House Republicans absolutely refuse to take the W. And Donald Trump isn't talking about this either, because I think he was kind of like, come a see, come a saw. Yeah, if you want to do it that way, that's fine. If you don't want to do it that way, I guess we'll not do it that way. But it's interesting that he's not saying anything about this, because I think he's like, I thought we had this solved.
Yeah, you know, you did. The thing about, well, not the thing, but one of the things that I think explains to the Democrats' puzzlement, but to the people who like Trump, is his authenticity. You know, I mean, you could say John Edwards was phony. Every single hair on John Edwards' body was phony.
Yeah.
John Kerry was pretty phony. Barack Obama, no, yeah. But Donald Trump, like him or not, like some of the things he does or not, he's no phony, okay? And I think people like that. That's so refreshing for someone in Washington. And it's no accident, one, that he doesn't come out of Washington, same as Ronald Reagan.
Right.
He goes against Washington in many ways, which most of the country is for, I think. And remember in the first term, first campaign, he was going against the establishment of both parties. And it's so refreshing. He's authentic. He stood up behind it. And shockingly, when he got in first term and now again this term, he's doing everything he promised to do.
Right.
Yeah. I mean, it's just, it's unbelievable watching Washington. And he is not of Washington. He's in Washington. And so I think that's a big plus. It's a kind of like a super strength in my mind, in the mind of a lot of people. And if you poll them, maybe it doesn't show in the poll numbers, but bottom line, put Donald Trump's authenticity up against Chuckie Schumer or Hakeem Jeffries, who's, did you see, I saw he's booked a luxury suite weekend in Las Vegas for Easter. So obviously he's going on a religious retreat. So he doesn't mind a recess.
So
they do that. Yeah.
So back to your column. I want to get back to your column. And again, it's that red state media calls Trump unpredictable, but determined is better. It's more accurate. You actually counted up how many times Donald Trump has said Iran cannot be allowed to have nuclear weapons. Now, every single president has said that since this first came up, starting with George W. Bush, which is when this first came up. And I spoke, by the way, I don't know if you saw it, but I had an interview with Undersecretary of State Robert Joseph, who was Undersecretary of State for George W. Bush. I'm not sure that if you've ever.
Yeah, talked no. With Joseph.
Interesting guy, fascinating guy. This is the guy before he was Undersecretary of State. This was the guy that was the lead negotiator in the deal to get Muammar Gaddafi to give up his nuclear weapons program.
Oh, yeah.
Joseph was the guy who literally talked that program onto Navy ships and shipped it out of Libya. And then after that, Bush appointed him Undersecretary of State for Arms Control and International Security, I think is the name of the position. But Iran was a big part of this because it was shortly before that the Iranian nuclear weapons program came to light. And so it was a big part of his couple of years in the Bush administration was dealing with this issue. And he's been working on it ever since. He still works on nuclear nonproliferation and security. So I was talking to him on, it was Thursday, but I put it up on Friday. And he thinks Donald Trump is doing the absolute right thing here. He said for decades, American presidents of both parties and European leaders of all parties pursued appeasement strategies.
Oh, yeah.
This is what he said, and I'm paraphrasing. I'm not quoting here, but I'm paraphrasing. That basically Donald Trump has to finish this right now. He's got to finish it. He said, because if it goes to another American president to deal with the situation, we'll go back to appeasement strategies. Because it's just simply easier. And he said something, I'm trying to remember what it was, and I was laughing when he said it. And afterwards, I said, I'm going to turn this into the Joseph rule. See if I can find it. But it's something like, there's no end to bad ideas in Washington. His point was bad ideas just keep coming back in Washington. Even when they fail, they just keep coming back.
One of the advantages and disadvantages simultaneously of our system of government is that we change out the people maximum every 8 years. That's a positive because you get fresh ideas in. It's a negative because the rest of the world knows, well, just hang on for a while. That's what the Taliban did in Afghanistan. Well, we'll hang on for a while. Obama even said this troop surge and we're going to end it next year. I mean, the superficial phoniness of those folks is beyond belief. And there's a twist in the Libya story. One, Libya was convinced, and he was, as you mentioned, he was part of that, was convinced to give up its nuclear weapons program. And the deal was we would leave him alone.
Yep.
Okay.
I didn't get into that with him, by the way. I'd love to talk to him about that. We were talking about Iran, obviously, but right. I would love to talk to him about that.
10 years later, almost to the day, Obama joined the European effort to throw out Gaddafi. So they didn't leave him alone once he gave up his weapons. And that's a lesson I think both North Korea and Iran have learned. Don't give them up. So you have to take them away. Now, boy, there'd be a hell of a fight in North Korea. And we're seeing a sticky wicket in Iran. But Trump, you're right. He has to do it now. Get it over with. And so if anybody can do it, it's Trump, because he has the willpower and the endurance and the pugnaciousness and the authenticity, as I said, to get this done. Everybody else wants to, like Washington does all the time, kick the can down the road. And they take care of each other, allow the can to be kicked. You know, I mean, Benghazi, okay, I just briefly on Benghazi, because it sticks in my craw forever. Four Americans died, four loyal Americans, not rescued, no attempt to support them, no fighters sent in, nothing. They were not prepared, Obama. He was off, we never did find out, for 16 hours the President of the United States went AWOL, the first time in, 30 years that an ambassador had been killed. We didn't know about it.
Yeah. I think the last time was Iran too, by the way.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, it was done by Iran. It was not in Iran, but it was done by Iran, if I remember correctly.
Yeah. Yeah. And Obama has never offered an explanation in the media, and even Republicans have never demanded it. So after Benghazi, we have months of oversight hearings with Trey Gowdy. Great photo ops. Remember Hillary Clinton with her arms up? What's the point? It's too late now.
Yeah.
And what came of that? Nada. Zip. Zilch. Nothing came out of it because they wanted to let it go on. They kicked the can down the road. They make a big publicity thing. And once again, no substance. And as always in Washington, no consequences.
Well, so, and I'll tell you why. Because all of the risk is on the action side. And this was the thing about the JCPOA, too. And this is something that Robert Joseph actually did speak about. Was based, and you're right about kicking the can down the road. He says appeasement keeps coming back because of the kicking the can down the road thing, because the people who do the appeasement generally don't have to deal with the consequences of it when it all goes bad. Yes. And Donald Trump has decided that he would rather try to actually end this threat with all of the tools at his disposal than to wait for Iran to achieve nuclear status. And then you can't do anything about it. And that's exactly what he's doing now. And that's the reason why, again, Robert Joseph is saying he's got to see it all the way through. And you're starting to see the other Gulf states say the same thing. Is that, okay, we may not have been big fans of the decision to go to war with Iran, but now that you've started this, and now that Iran has shown what a threat it is to the region, we can't you can't let it go. The regime has to go. You got to see it all the way through. So
I don't know that it will succeed, but it sure hasn't succeeded in the past.
Right. We've done everything else and it hasn't worked. Literally, we've done everything else. We've given them money. We've hundreds
of billions of dollars. And what did they do? They used it to finance more terrorism. Killing more Americans. They've been killing Americans for 47 years. And I think not just the president, but I think his people could do a much better job of explaining. Bite the bullet now, because if you don't, later millions are going to pay for this.
Well, that, you know, they're saying
this isn't a war of choice. Okay. We have to end it now. And,
they're saying Americans, it, you know, the media, it's not getting through the media. Let me give you an example. I wanted to talk to me about this today too, but this was just an absurd thing. On Friday, I think it was either Friday or Saturday. I forget which one. I think it was Friday. The Washington Post reported that the U.S. was committing a war crime, arguably a war crime, by dropping anti-tank mines in residential areas of Iran. Supposedly because we were trying to stop the mobile launchers from moving around, supposedly, right? And I'm going to read you the opening paragraphs of this. Images posted to social media Thursday show what experts said are U.S. landmines dispersed across a residential area in southern Iran, in what appears to be the first instance of more than two decades of American forces using the weapons. The photos show American BLU-91B anti-tank landmines, which are released from an aircraft as part of the Gator mine scattering system, according to four munitions experts who reviewed the imagery at the Washington Post request. The United States is the only party in the Iran war known to possess the system. Images of the landmines were posted on social media platforms by Dimitri Lascaris, a Canadian independent journalist currently reporting from Iran and host of the Reason to Resist podcast and state media outlet Islamic Republic of Iran Broadcasting. Okay. Then, either late yesterday or early today, a correction appeared, and they labeled it a correction. A previous version of this article incorrectly described Dimitri Lascaris, a Canadian independent journalist, as being in Iran with permission from the Iranian government, and said that the people accompanying him were government representatives. He said he was invited by state media outlet Islamic Republic of Iran Broadcasting, and that their employees acted as guides and interpreters. This guy was invited in by the Iranians to propagate propaganda. So I did, and what the Washington Post editors apparently never bothered to do, was I went to Lascaris' Substack. He's got a YouTube. He's primarily a podcaster, but he's also got a Substack where he promotes, you know, he's like we do with these things, right? We have a post that go up and stuff like that. And that's typical. So that's not the issue. But over at his Substack, about a week before he posted these pictures and all this kind of stuff, this was his headline announcing that he was going to Iran. I'm off to Iran to cover the crimes of the Epstein regime. Before and after that, who engages in more censorship? Israel or Iran? They're liberating Iranians by murdering them. These are all headlines from Lascaris' website. To protect Iranians from Iran's police, U.S. and Israel massacre civilians. And another is Israeli war crime in Iran. These are some of the thoughtful, objective journalist headlines from Lascaris' Substack. Now, I mean, just the fact that, Reason to Resist podcast should tell you a little something about the journalistic objectivity of the guy that you're promoting as an independent journalist. This guy's basically a Lord Haha. The regime has brought him in there so he could report on the news by basically regurgitating Iranian propaganda. Now, I don't know. It's possible that we are spreading those mines around there. But if they're using mobile launchers, that's not really a war crime. What that is would be, I think, a rather ineffective, frankly, and futile way of trying to stop the mobile launchers, especially when you've got air supremacy and you can just watch these things as they're rolling around and target them with drones. I mean, that's much more effective. I doubt very seriously that we're dropping mines in there. It's possible we are. I'm not going to go one way or the other on this, but I'm certainly not going to take Lascaris' word for it and the IRGC's word for it. However, for the Washington Post, Andrew, apparently that's good enough.
Yeah. Yeah. It's remember Ben Rhodes from the Obama administration?
Oh, yeah. I was thinking about that.
How easy it was to manipulate today's reporters because they're younger, they don't know history, and they're eager to please. And they sure did. The beat goes on, unfortunately.
Well, and this is right after CNN was trying to argue that their journalists are operating independently in Iran. They have actual employee journalists in Iran, CNN, and so did PBS. But PBS was a little bit more honest about it. Nicholas Fondacaro over at Newsbusters was talking about this.
Boy, you're everywhere, Morrissey.
Well, I mean, well, Fondacaro is. PBS was talking about coverage during the 12-day war, right, in June. And PBS said, so, you know, during our filming trip, it's very challenging to work as a journalist on the ground in Iran. There's a lot of limitations. He talks about the fact that they did have minders. CNN is saying that they didn't have minders. They just minders. They have interpreters, but the interpreters are all from the IRGC, and the interpreters are making very, you know, they're choosing the people that they can talk to. Right.
And they're choosing the interpretation.
If you don't
speak Farsi, you can't double check the interpreter.
You know, it kind of reminds me of, you know, this comes up as a gag in comedies from time to time, but you know, where you've got the two leaders who are talking in their own languages, and the one guy starts erupting in a big long string of thing, and the other leader looks at the interpreter and said, "What did he say?" He said, "Yes."
And Rubio did a funny thing this winter. He was speaking, I mean, it was at one of the Latin American meetings, and Vance was there standing behind him. And Rubio spoke in his fluent Spanish. And then he turned around to Vance and he said, "I just told him I got a wonderful deal by switching to Geico." So, I mean, that's so smart. So smart Rubio is.
He's so
well spoken. And I noticed there's nothing scientific or maybe even methodical or certified about the CPAC straw poll, but this weekend,
yeah,
Vance once again won the "Who do you want in 28 straw poll, but the last one a year ago, Rubio got 3%, and this time he was up within 8 or 9 points of Vance. So
yeah,
the message is getting through. Yeah, his stature is going up.
It's going up quite a bit. Absolutely. All right. Well, speaking of stature going up and other jokes, I guess it's time for jokes of the day. That was a really terrible
song. I have one of them. It's a comedian that I don't know his name, but I saw him online, and he said the weather forecast, the 5-day weather forecast was Iran. No, the 5-day weather forecast for Iran is 2 days. I love it.
Yeah, that's great. I like that. Yeah, all right. Yeah. I got two short ones for you. All right. Yeah. So this man is seen fleeing from an operating room, and he's fleeing through the lobby, and a security guard pulls him aside and says, "What are you doing, man? What are you running away from?" And he says, I'm scared to death. I can't do this. And he says, "Well, what happened?" He says, "I'm there on the operating table, and the nurses keep saying over and over again, don't get nervous, don't be afraid, be strong, this is only a small operation," stuff like that. And the security guard says, "Well, what's wrong with that? Didn't that make you feel better?" He says, "No, she was talking to the surgeon."
All right. That one I got suspicious part.
Yeah. That one is exactly. All right. Second one here. Man's talking to his neighbor. He says, "I just got myself a great new hearing aid. It cost me $4,000, but it's state of the art. It's perfect." And the neighbor says, "Really? What kind is it?" And he says, "1230.
Okay. Hey,
right. That's jokes funny. Of the day.net. I always like jokes of the day.net. They've got some funny ones. Most of them are clean. Sometimes I just pick out the dirty ones, but not today. Today I picked two clean ones. So.
It's not dirty. It's smutty, I would say.
Smutty. It's risque. I prefer risque.
Yeah.
Risque sounds classy. I don't know. It just sounds
It sounds French. Smutty is more accurate.
Smoutte. Smoutte. We'll call it smoutte. How's that? Smoutte, that sounds French too.
Yeah. Yeah.
All right. Well, the Prince of Twitter is not French, but he is the Prince of Twitter, and he is the regent of redstate.com, Andrew Le Malcolm.
Monsieur Malcolm.
He is le roi du Twitter. You can find him at AH Malcolm on Twitter or X if you prefer. And also at redstate.com. Go read his stuff over there. It's great. And Malcolm, always fun. We'll talk again next week.
Thank you. Merci, Edward. A tout à l'heure.